You're tuned in to All the Best, bringing you engaging audio narratives from emerging Australian storytellers every week. All the Best is proudly sponsored by Bank Australia. Join the bank with clean money. Is the money in your bank doing harm or good? Bank Australia says their money is clean because they guarantee their customers' money will not be loaned to industries that do harm. Industries like coal, weapons, gambling, tobacco, and the live animal export trade. Instead, Bank Australia's customers' money is invested in projects that create positive impact, such as community renewable energy, disability housing, and safe and sustainable housing for people at risk of homelessness and domestic violence. Is your bank aligned with your values? If not, learn more. Search Bank Australia Clean Money. Bank Australia is a proud sponsor of FBI Radio. Hi, I'm Samantha Groth. In this episode of All the Best, we're joining the party. Our first story is about two people. They're both drawn into traditions and communities that are unfamiliar to them. And they're drawn in through music.
My name is Marlo Fitzpatrick. I'm an organist. I recently started working in Newcastle at the Anglican Cathedral, playing the organ and working with the choir. I've been playing the organ now for about 8 years. It's sort of taken over my life in a way that I didn't expect, I think. When I was at school, I saw the organ for the first time at our school speech day, which was at Sydney Town Hall. And if you've been in the town hall there, you'll have noticed this enormous instrument. It's so magnificent. I didn't know this at the time, but it's one of the biggest and most impressive and most beautiful organs in the world. And I think at the age of whatever, 13 or 12, it made me think, I want to play that because it's so impressive. The few times I'd heard the organ, it was very stirring in a way that I didn't find with lots of other instruments. There's something about it that was quite mystical and mysterious. My previous musical experience was with monophonic instruments. I played clarinet, saxophone, and flute in school bands. And like those are really fascinating instruments in lots of ways, but you can't play a chord on them. And for someone who's interested in harmony and counterpoint and the interplay of voices in music, and by extension also interested in composition, which is the sort of bringing single voices together, the organ gives you a fantastic groundwork for understanding how voices come together in a way that lots of single voice instruments can't. So I started off playing hymns at this little church in Balmain, probably terribly, and then eventually plucked up the courage to prepare some music for the school speech day at the town hall, which had been the sort of inspiration in the first place. And I spent all summer learning my little piece that I'd chosen, which was going to be very showy. It was the Toccata in G by Dubois. I now realise it sort of rolls eyes in the organ community because it's the first piece that everyone learns that's showy, that sounds hard but isn't. And I think that sense of joy at the instrument when I play the final chord of the Dubois Toccata, that feeling has probably kept me going for the 5 years since. I was not particularly fond of Christianity, and I still have issues, obviously, with organized religion, but my antipathy towards the church has lessened. It's kind of difficult to talk about this in the abstract because when you're in a church service and playing the music, you are so absorbed in the process of creating music, whether it's to praise God. But music for me has always been about accessing some higher form of expression, and whether or not it's expression of yourself in a spiritual way, or whether it's whether you view it as artistic expression, I think they achieve pretty similar goals in that a lot of people need that form of higher communication to feel that they've given something meaningfully. I don't view myself giving something to a god when I play, but I do think that performing well gives something of a more than worldly quality.
My name's Lloyd O'Hanlon. I've been living in Georgia for the best part of 2 years. I originally came to Georgia for the first time in 2014. There was a singers' festival just outside of Melbourne, and there was a Georgian couple, ethnomusicologists, who live in Australia, running workshop and teaching a Georgian song. And my brother was there. He'd never heard of it either. He sort of walked by and fancied the sounds he heard coming out of the little tent. And he went in and sort of discovered his own voice from their encouragement. And he came home from that absolutely beaming and was always coming over to my place and trying to sing to me this one voice Georgian song. Like, I remember what song it was. It was... Yeah, I felt like it was missing context, and he kept saying, "Ah, oh, man, you gotta come along to this Georgian choir thing. Maybe we'll have an opportunity to go to Georgia." And I'm like, "Georgia? Where? What is that? Home of Stalin, if history revolutions taught me anything." But yeah, I went along to a choir practice with him after a lot of persistence on his behalf. There was a super encouraging environment, and I understood it. I didn't understand what we were singing about. All the consonant sounds and everything were totally new to me. I mean, I'd never sung before in my life, but it was very profound. It was very beautiful singing with other people. I quit my job, bought a one-way ticket to Georgia, and went along with this choir to partake in the 7th International Symposium on Traditional Polyphony. It happens once every 2 years, occurs in Tbilisi, capital of Georgia, and the streets during this 1 week are completely alive with music. After the symposium, I felt like I wanted to continue doing something like that. I liked this mode of learning off old song masters who live in a fairly traditional way and teach in a very traditional way. We'd heard from this community of foreigners that sing Georgian music, which is bigger than you'd think, you've got to go and stay in Merisi. There's a very, very sweet family there. They have a particular kind of interesting song that comes from there. It's different from everywhere else in Georgia. I had a lot of time. I had a one-way ticket, so I was just keen to keep learning and keep experiencing this Georgian folk. So we got the train to the west side of the country. This kind of humble, nice-looking chap, Jamal. We knew his name was. We knew nothing about him, really, or his family, just that they taught music. We didn't really have a common language. His English was okay. And none of us spoke Georgian at that point. And we got in the car with him. So when we arrived and sat at his table with his family, he made a toast for our welcome and then said, "Yeah, this is what we do." And launched into a song which they've been singing in that area for hundreds, if not thousands of years, a song about a honeybee conveying the messages between two lovers. And that was and still is the most profound musical experience in my life to date.
My religiosity or not has been a pretty important question, I think, in where my career can go as an organist. Most people have no issue like this because they start hearing the organ at their church when they go to church and they just go on and probably have a few qualms about Christianity, but are happy to stay on in their church as a Christian. I come from the outside, and so the sort of job interviews that you go through, which seem to be going perfectly fine until they ask, so, what's your relationship with God like? And I can only answer, well, I like the chords, I like the pictures, and I like the candles. But, I mean, I suppose you have to look deeper and think about all the good things that church ritual can bring to a non-believer. And I think it's probably short-sighted of a lot of angry atheists, such as my former self, to assume that all of the concerns of Christianity are misguided and dated. Because I think a lot of them are about the human condition, like where do we go when we die? And even if you don't like the answers, I think it's worth being prodded on the questions themselves, which we probably don't get a lot now because a lot of us are decentralized sort of individuals who don't go to church, who don't get a chance to engage in serious meditation, which is how I try to view good Christian church service. And I suppose I should be thankful that I get the opportunity to think about the bigger questions in life, even if it's through a framework I don't necessarily agree with.
I didn't really know what I was looking for in Georgia, but I certainly found something. I found it made me appreciate family a little bit more in a sense that was a bit of a surprise to me, because hanging out with this family every day and seeing them sing around the table at night and just the closeness which that allowed them to have inspired me to kind of learn a bit more about my own tradition and learn a bit more about my own folk, because this is a tradition, but it's not mine. But something which being in Georgia and hanging out with Georgians taught me was closeness with family, and singing together with family is a beautiful thing, and it's nothing to be, you know, ashamed of or embarrassed about. It's like it takes a lot. You're kind of very exposed, like when you're singing, and in Australian culture, I guess when you're not so expressive as the Georgians are, maybe. But I feel like I carried that sentiment of singing together and that closeness that came along with it. I'm now doing it in my own context, and we've, as a family, like my brother and my mother, we learned a song of our own tradition, of our own musical heritage, which is Irish. And now we do that pretty much whenever we meet, whenever we find ourselves in three, whether we're in public or in private, we sing together. And that is something which we never did before this. Like a lot of my friends who are in very good choirs now, when I ask them how they started singing with their family around the table. Their parents taught them songs and they sang together. And I'll definitely be doing the same with my kids.
That story was by Niall Hoskin and Suzanne Derry. Original music compositions and sound design by Suzanne Derry. The supervising producers were Riley McCullough and Alison Chan. Special thanks to Tina Matalov and to Lloyd O'Hanlon for his recordings from Georgia. All the Best exists because we want emerging Australian storytellers to learn how to make audio stories like the ones you're hearing today. You can join our party by pitching to us from any part of Australia, and we'll pair you with one of our supervising producers. Email contact at allthebestradio.com. With the Australian federal election coming up in a matter of months, Angela Moran is getting herself electorally educated.
Recently, I voted in the Victorian state election. About a week before, I realised that I knew a disturbingly small amount about both politics and the election process. The amount of Googling I had to do to make sure I made an informed vote was concerning. At one point, I literally Googled, who should I vote for? Other things I Googled. What do the different political parties stand for? What is two-party preferred? If between Senate and House of Reps, who is the PM? Just kidding. I knew that one. I think. I'd never really cared about politics before, but it must be something about hitting your late 20s that makes you care about stuff. By the time I actually voted, I wished I'd known more, and it made me think, why do I know so little about our political system? And how many more people are there like me who really have very little idea what they're doing when voting day comes around?
Hello, are you voting today?
I decided to skulk around a voting centre to find out.
Hello, sir, are you just about to vote? You're going to vote? Hello, are you on your way to vote?
Some voters were pretty upfront about their lack of knowledge.
Can I ask whether you feel well informed before you're about to vote?
No, not at all.
Can I ask if you do either?
I don't know that much myself, to be totally honest.
Good luck.
I don't know anything either, sorry, love.
You don't? You just voted?
Just voted.
And just when it seemed I was going to get an in-depth answer.
Can I ask if you feel well informed?
On the state election, to be honest, probably not. I'm still undecided about policy.
I'm sorry, you cannot, this within 6 metres, you can't do any of this. You're breaking the law by doing that here.
Oh, sorry.
So
okay.
There's a 6 metres.
I need to go down here?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for letting me know. Sorry.
Yeah. You're in trouble.
I was still allowed to hang around near the annoying people with pamphlets, though.
Well, I don't think it's generational. I think you're either interested in it or you're not. And when you try and explain to somebody how the parliamentary system works, often you see people's eyes glaze over.
Like
so your eyes are going.
No, I was listening.
Yeah, and I was totally listening to this guy too.
Yeah, see, two-party preferred, people don't understand it very well.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Pretty much basically your vote will end up on the winner or the loser. So your vote you never lose your vote. It will end up going up through the preference system of where was it distributed by the next person until you've got my vote against another vote in
right.
The deselection process.
I'll have to come back to that one, I think. I really should know more. And now I'm an adult, educating myself about politics is my responsibility.
Siri, can you explain Australian politics to me?
I'm not sure I understand.
But why don't I know an adequate amount in the first place? I mean, knowing how to choose the right leaders for your country should be of utmost importance. I got to thinking, did I actually learn this stuff at school? Maybe it's not my fault after all. Maybe I was let down by the New South Wales education system. I got researching, and recent studies actually show that young people are passionate about certain political issues, but don't know enough about voting in order to feel in control of their political voice. Amongst all the really useful stuff I was taught in school that has totally helped me since, algebra, the feudal system, Shakespearean verse.
To be or not to be.
I don't remember learning anything about the electoral process. I spoke to a current primary school teacher in New South Wales. They still do the good old Canberra excursion. Good times. Yeah. But apart from House of Reps is green and Senate is red, the only thing I recall about that trip is eating way too many minties and throwing up on the bus. Surely we were taught something relevant in high school, a little closer to voting age. Well, if we were, I was obviously too busy worrying about whether I'd bought the right colour of Etney skate shoes, because I don't recall it. I tried to contact the New South Wales Department of Education, but they didn't want to talk about possible shortcomings in the curriculum on national radio. But all was not lost. I'm a millennial. I've done my fair share of internet stalking and I managed to track down the history curriculum from my high school years. And didn't I have a thrilling evening of reading in front of the fireplace? After almost losing my mind down the rabbit hole of slippery syllabi slippery dips, I finally found this. So it looks like back in the day, there were two elective topics my teacher could have chosen from, and in just one of these, leadership politics and political institutions was one option out of 25 areas of study. One out of 25! That does not seem to me worthy treatment of such an important topic. Edward, the fire's dying out, darl. So it seems while I was probably given the voting basics at school, it was when I was far from voting age. If I'd wanted to understand politics properly, I would have had to do my own extracurricular study. But I didn't, because let's be honest. Politics is boring. Politics is boring, spoken by Angela Moran, authorised by the Australian government of Angela. It's hard to get excited about something that seems to only involve people much older than myself who like to wear suits 24/7, with the exception of the occasional budgie smuggler or tracksuit. And I'm sure that's still an issue for a lot of young people. But I wanted to find out, so I thought I'd speak to an actual teenager. My sister.
I'm 19 and I voted once.
Okay, now you don't have to tell me who you voted for.
But I don't remember who I voted for. I think I just voted for the one that Dad said, oh, vote for this guy.
Do any of your friends seem to have an interest in politics, or do you ever talk about politics?
Never. I think the young generation don't really care.
I'm trying to remember how much we learned about politics at school, and you just finished 1 year ago, right?
We don't learn anything about them. Only in year six when you go to Parliament House.
Was there anything about voting or the political parties?
No.
Seriously?
100%.
Wow, our school really sucked. There's clearly a bit of a gap in the education system. In order to choose the leaders of our country, we should be edumacated. One person who's just edumacated herself is Sam.
I am trying to understand the entire political system of Australia. What the heck? Am I crazy? I think so.
Sam was born in Australia, but grew up in Malaysia before moving back to Melbourne with her family at the age of 17. Growing up in Malaysia with a PM who was a
complete corrupt cookie,
she was pretty much taught to disengage with politics. And she carried that attitude with her back to Australia until reaching a turning point after voting in her first ever election.
I looked at the ballot paper and I just remember thinking, I don't know any of these guys. And being in that polling booth and feeling completely inept in making a decision that has a genuine impact, I was like, okay, this is serious and I want to care about this and I should educate myself.
Her younger brother felt the same way. So in the lead up to the next election, they teamed up and began studying together.
So this is my book.
They even made study notes. Cute.
But yeah, so talking about this bad boy, there's charts, there's grids, there's blackouts, there's highlighting, you know, because I mean, like, color coding is very important to me.
They researched every political party and their policies, learning about any topics they felt they didn't know enough about along the way.
For example, what is the budget? What does it encapsulate? Unions. Welfare isn't something that I know a lot about. Superannuation, randomly enough, but I don't know about it. Fishing. Don't know anything about fishing. I'm gonna try.
At midnight, the day of the election, Sam and her brother finally finished reviewing all the parties and came to their own decisions on who they were going to vote for.
I brought my notes with me into the voting booth and I just asked somebody if I could do that because I had no idea. I was like, is this cheating? And I literally just copied what I'd set in terms of my preferences onto the voting paper. I put it into the little slot thingo and then, you know, boom, I'd voted according to my personal beliefs. And I literally came out of there I just felt incredible. I genuinely felt empowered. And that was really, really special. Like, I almost high-fived, I think, a Greens, like, staff member outside.
Another woman who decided to take her political education into her own hands is Romy.
I think I've always been a little bit interested in politics.
She's just completed the Pathways to Politics course for women at Melbourne Uni. And Romy's got a few insights for me that could explain why I'm so politically challenged.
I think in Australia, we're really, really lucky. And most of the time, the majority of Australians are not fighting for their very basic survival. It can be very easy to just kind of go along with the flow.
She also explained what may have contributed to my disinterest in politics as a young woman.
There's loads and loads of research that shows that if women don't have a visual representation of what it is that they want to become, so if there aren't female politicians, then females are going to be less likely to take up those positions.
And she also has this to say.
The luxury that many Australians have that they don't need to be engaged in politics for their survival means that a lot of the people who do get involved might sit on the really extreme edges of the spectrum, which means that government then isn't representative of the people and the people feel more disillusioned and disempowered. And I think it's really important for the average Joe or the average Joanna, if we're trying to encourage more women to step up, but to actually step up and take a role in politics so that there can be the more moderate, everyday Australian voice in Parliament.
While she's 100% on the mark there, I don't think I'm ready to run for Parliament just yet. So what's this everyday Joanna to do? All right. Play.
Yeah, see, two-party preferred. People don't understand it very well. It's pretty simple. The idea is that...
The thought of this being wrong never had crossed my mind.
That story was by Angela Moran. The supervising producer was Jordan Fennell. You've been tuned into All the Best, bringing you engaging audio narratives from emerging Australian storytellers every week. All the Best is proudly sponsored by Bank Australia. Join the bank with clean money. Is the money in your bank doing harm or good? Bank Australia says their money is clean because they guarantee their customers' money will not be loaned to industries that do harm. Industries like coal, weapons, gambling, tobacco, and the live animal export trade. Instead, Bank Australia's customers' money is invested in projects that create positive impact, such as community renewable energy, disability housing, and safe and sustainable housing for people at risk of homelessness and domestic violence. Is your bank aligned with your values? If not, learn more. Search Bank Australia Clean Money. Bank Australia is a proud sponsor of FBI Radio. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Elena Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Aaron Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. And I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. And make sure you connect to us by subscribing to the podcast